Word of Mouth Wednesday. Word up, we're back here on a Wednesday, March 17th show. We got a big show tonight. We have the co-host Robin Nieto is here with a guest live in the studio. First up, you'll be hearing from Liz Marshall, a documentarian, and her movie, Water on the Table, all leading up to a World Water Day, which is coming up next week. So we're going to be talking about water, and then we're going to get in the flow talking about big things going on in the economy with the committee chair of the communications division and webmaster of the Recession Relief Coalition. That's right, Ron Zig is back, and he'll be on the show tonight too. So we got a big show lined up tonight. Some news, some headlines, some events, some music, and more. So stay tuned to Word of Mouth Wednesday. My name's Daniel Libby. We'll be back with our first interview coming up next. 7 to 8 p.m. Word of Mouth Wednesday.
All right, so we're here. Hello. I can't actually hear my feedback here. Okay, here we go. So we're talking about water. Okay, it's St. Patrick's Day. We should say, you know, happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody out there because everybody's celebrating. But we're talking about water tonight because next week, water is the thing because World Water Day happens on Monday. So we're going to be celebrating water for that week. So, and because we're not going to be airing until the middle of the week, we wanted to touch on the issue of water tonight. And we have a special guest. Her name is Liz Marshall. She is an award-winning Canadian filmmaker. She's directed documentary projects around the world, including Africa, the Middle East, South Asia, Central and South America, Europe, and North America. In early this year, Liz completed Water on the Table, her first feature-length documentary. Welcome, Liz. Thanks for being here tonight.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
Good. Thanks.
Great.
So, Liz, I want to talk about your film.
Yes.
I know there's a lot of issues around water, but
yes,
I want to focus on your film. So my first question is, why water? Why now?
Okay. Well, first of all, I love talking about filmmaking. So, and before I do that, I just wanted to tell the listeners that World Water Day is March 22nd. And that, yes, that is this coming Monday. And it's exciting time because Water on the Table will actually have its world premiere on TVO, The View From Here. The View From Here is a documentary strand on TVO, and it premieres on March 24th at 10 p.m., so I hope everyone tunes in. And TVO, as part of that launch, is hosting a special Water Week. So all things related to water, the politics, what's at stake, what's to celebrate, all of those issues. Now, so you asked me why water. Well, I think my inspiration is Maud Barlow, who is the central main character of Water on the Table. And in 2002, I was working as a producer videographer at Book Television, the channel, with Daniel Richler back in the Chum Limited days. Not the, things have changed.
Yeah,
anyway, Blue Gold, her book, came across my desk and I read it and I was very inspired by her very sort of very warm, passionate narrative, her vision for the world, and how water is used as a symbol for that vision and the politics of it and really what's at stake, you know. And as a Canadian, just the need to become more aware, more conscious, and not take our water sources resource for granted. So that was the inspiration.
So in the film, it does feature water and it does feature Maud Barlow. Tell us about, you know, it's an hour long. And tell us about, you know, what you did in terms of the film, because you followed around Maud Barlow in different situations. Tell us about the length of it and the challenges that you had filming her in her different, sometimes conflictive situations.
Sure. Well, first of all, there's two versions of the film. There's the one-hour broadcast version, which is 1 hour, and then there's a feature-length version, which is 80 minutes, and that version has not been released yet, so stay tuned, everyone. That, you know, when a filmmaker can make something that is feature length, then you have more time and space to create more cinematic tone and feel to your story. the question was why Maud and the locations that I
the locations that you filmed it, because you did go to the tar sands.
Yeah,
there's a scene in there where you're where she's at a location and obviously an industrial site where you're not supposed to be.
Well, we flew over the tar sands and she coined it Canada's Mordor. Which then all hit the press. It was splashed on all the front pages. So she loves to, make a splash, so to speak. And she did with that comment. And you know what? It really does, and it did when we were flying over and witnessing it firsthand and filming her in the process. It does look like Canada's Mordor. It's just a very eerie kind of... visual experience to, from a bird's eye view, witness nature and nature surrounding this area of just devastation and decay and death. And that's really what it looks and feels like. And that's where, so much of our oil is produced. But focusing on water, it takes three barrels of fresh water to produce 5 barrels of bitumen oil. And you can learn more about that if you read Maud Barlow's book, Blue Covenant. But the other locations that I shadowed Maud at over the course of a year were also the halls of the UN, because the film really started... I got the green light from funders basically 2 weeks after Maud was appointed as the UN senior advisor on water to the 63rd president of the United Nations General Assembly, Father Miguel Descoto Brockman, a former revolutionary from Nicaragua. And it was a fascinating experience to shadow her in the halls of the UN and actually... right on the day of her inception, her actual introduction, the welcoming party in his official office, and the camera was there. So really the style of the documentary for that course, that whole year, was to really shadow Maud in a very intimate, up close and personal way, and to just be a fly on the wall. And she never spoke to the camera. She was great, actually. After a while, she just really forgot about us, and just did her thing. And I think that really comes across in the style of the film that it is. The other location that's really significant is she. Protested Site 41 in Simcoe County in Ontario. And maybe a lot of the listeners and know what happened with that story, but I won't give it away because I want everyone to watch the film. But really there's an arc of a story there because it's captured over time. And Maud was on the front lines. It's a very grassroots story that's local, but it has global resonance. And in Simcoe County, there's a very large aquifer, which is groundwater, that's considered the cleanest water in the world. Scientific measurements and estimates have called it the cleanest water in the world. And there was a big dump site that was proposed to be built right on top of it. And farmers and local Mohawk First Nation warriors and activists and children and families and women and media and just people who care, cottagers and people that care about water and about the land, just came. It started off with maybe 200 people protesting, and then it was over a few months, it became about 2,000 people. And it's really a remarkable grassroots symbol of the power of the people. And so that was the other significant thread storyline that the film captured with Maud. But then there's also the personal up-close story with Maud, you know, the woman behind the podium, behind we're so used to seeing Maud Barlow in that public eye, media savvy kind of soundbite style, but the film really does get behind all that and gets more shows her as a real person, not just this superhero.
Do you find that when you were filming and talking about, you know, Simcoe, and you went out to Alberta and you were watching folks in their rallies around protecting their water, did you find that there's a difference between concern in different parts of Canada and between cities and the outskirts?
Well, it depends what the issue is. I think when people are really made aware, I think Canadians are truly interested and hungry to learn about these issues. And when they do, I think they care. I think we care. And when it's water, I mean, water is life. You can't live without water. So, you know, it doesn't only affect us. It affects wildlife, the ecosystem, future generations. It's a symbol of life, really. So I think in that way, I think people from all walks of life, and it doesn't matter what political affiliation or stripe that you're coming from, it doesn't matter. It breaks all those barriers down. Because we all, not all, but many of us care about life.
So the question of the film was whether water should be a commodity or a human right.
Yeah, that is the essence of the film. The film asks the question, is water a commodity like any other, like running shoes or Coca-Cola? Or is water a human right like air?
And that's the question that Maud posed at the United Nations. And I think that was a very interesting part of the film, because I don't think many people understand. I think Maud Bardot is known as an activist, but a Canadian activist. But I don't think it's very well known that she's actually playing a role at the United Nations. And your film actually begins with her at the United Nations. Can you tell us about, she also mentioned in your film that there was a war going on within the United Nations, and it was between those people who wanted to see it, between private interests, trying to privatize things within the United Nations, and those people who didn't see the world that way. Did you, when you were filming that, did you see those types of conflicts playing out?
No, not really, because we weren't there long enough observing, capturing those nuances and stories within the UN. But Maud said that because the UN represents, it's an international body that represents the people and governments. It's not meant to represent corporations and private interests. And so, you know, it's really, I think it's a profound statement, because it's kind of indicative of where we are as a global peoples, and you know, and it's a profound question, because we do need to look at that deeply.
And I wanted to talk about the film itself in the way it is. It's not just a political documentary, it's also a very artistic film. And can you tell us about, because you have a lot of long sort of still shots of water, and then the story is narrated by Maud Bardot and by actors, just normal regular folk. But tell us about your vision of the film. What did you want to portray with the art behind the film?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's a thousand different ways to make a documentary. I didn't want it to feel like a newsy piece of journalism. I wanted it to really feel cinematic. And when I say cinematic, I mean I wanted it to evoke emotion, and for it to be an experience for the audience, for the viewer. And what I mean by that is, really, if this is about water, then water needed to be actually the main subject, the main character. And so it was all about how it would be framed and composed and then edited into the story. So I made sure I got basically one of the best cinematographers this country has to offer, Steve Cousins. He has an exquisite eye. He really does. He has an immaculate sense of composition. And it really was to elevate the subject of water beyond all the political and talky stuff all the way through. You know, water's talked about at the United Nations. It's talked about in the debates with economists. It's talked about at the grassroots by activists. I mean, it's talked about in so many different ways. And it was important to me from the get-go to express water as a visual, artistic medium, language all the way through the film that would elevate the subject matter, so that the viewer, not to be pompous or like not to be, you know, to create something that was, I don't know the word, but I wanted it to be, obviously the film, to be really accessible to everybody. But I think, as I said earlier, there's so many ways to make a documentary, and because it's a visual medium, it's not a radio, you know, talk show or whatever. So the visual language is very important, and I'm always interested in pushing those boundaries and trying to find new ways or different ways to tell a story.
But also the sound, the audio was amazing. Like, it was just as as impressive as the visual. Tell us something about
that's great. Okay, that's so true. And you know, first of all, you need an amazing, like, solid, technically solid, good location sound recordist. And I had that with Jason Milligan. He's one of the best documentary location sound recordists. And he just was, you know, because can you imagine following Maude and all those people? And you have to get good audio. You have to not only hear her, but you have to hear other things that are going on. And so there's that component. And then when you're in post-production, there's music. And music is just so important. Either and these are all conscious decisions. Like, a lot of documentaries don't include music, like Frederick Wiseman, who's a great documentary filmmaker. He chooses never to use music because music is actually manipulative. But so is editing, and so is everything that you're crafting. I knew I wanted some great composers, so I got Mark Shannon and Jennifer Moore, and that's also Jennifer Moore's voice, which is used sparingly throughout. She has a beautiful, beautiful voice, and they did, I think, an amazing job at just creating this soundtrack, this soundscape,
That's what that actually was, the effect. It did sound like a soundscape. It's the music sort of followed the narrative of the film. It went along with it and it actually, exactly. So here you're listening to a little bit of the soundtrack.
Water justice is the right of every living being on Earth and the right of the Earth itself to have water for sustainable life. I'm afraid of running out of time on this mission and just not being able to get there fast enough to stop what I really do see is a crisis of monumental proportions.
Nice. Yeah. That's the trailer, actually. And social media is such a cool tool to, you know, I'm really learning so much more about it now with this project, and the project hasn't even been released yet officially, and the trailer's already had just almost 2,000 unique viewers, it's exciting. It's exciting to harness or draw attention to a project like this online and to try to tap into your audience before your premiere. And
So it's actually the trailer's on YouTube right now?
Yeah, people can check it out on YouTube or on www.waterontheTable.com
I went to that, I think, to get this audio to your website.
Yeah.
The link's through your website.
Yeah. The other thing I just wanted to mention about, there's another important element to the film. I always explain the film in three elements. There's Maude and her story, and it's a portrait of this woman who's an activist, and then there's water, which we've talked about. And then there's the debates, and there's several dramatic, I consider them dramatic, I don't know what you thought, but several dramatic debates with Maud's opponents, because the thing about Maud Barlow is that she has a lot of enemies. And that was part of what was compelling for me in wanting to do this documentary about her. She's a woman in her 60s, you know, she's my mother's age, and she's really has this radical, revolutionary vision and view of the world, and she is so committed and so passionate to that vision and view, and she never stops working, ever. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for her. And in getting to know her and reading her books and everything, I also realized, boy, this woman has a lot of enemies too. And she's not aggressive. She's not a bulldog at all. She's in fact, she's quite diplomatic and very gracious, but she always speaks her truth. And it was important for the film, I think, to be well-rounded and to be the type of film that would make people think, as opposed to just having Maud's story, and which, again, I mean, sometimes that can feel manipulative for someone watching, you know, because they're not getting the full picture. So I chose to, also with the encouragement of my commissioning editor, Jane Jankovic at TVO, she was also very encouraging to make sure to include the other side. So, you know, I'm really glad that I did. And so there's several opponents, both from Canada and the U.S., and I think it makes for almost a chilling, dramatic sequences.
Certain companies didn't actually, I guess the requests were made, but they didn't agree to be filmed for
that's
the,
right
for this film.
I was turned down by a lot of different organizations. Either they just didn't return my call or my email, and I would always persist, or they just outright said not interested.
Because there is quite, I mean, when it comes to water, let's say in
Nestle
Ontario,
Nestle Canada
for instance,
Nestle Waters Canada definitely turned me down. The CAP, which is the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers, they no way. And that was because I used the word tar sands as opposed to oil sands in my conversations with them. These places are becoming less and less transparent. Other films, there's a film called H2 Oil that was made by Shannon Walsh. I think she's a Montreal-based filmmaker. I saw that film at Hot Docs last year. I believe that she was the last filmmaker to actually get access to that other side. You know, the oil industry, the people on the inside. So the rest of us are just sort of, you know, we can't get in. So I think it depends how you make your film, but it can be really interesting to see the other side and to really give them a voice and give them some screen time that doesn't feel token, like, oh, this was forced, I had to have their opinion, so therefore I give them 30 seconds,
right,
which you see in some documentaries, you see, or news pieces or whatever. But I did want to show the other side because
right.
I wanted to explore that perspective,
yeah,
and give a lot of weight to it.
I'm surprised that those companies didn't send what they normally would send, which is their, you know, public relations officer and say, you know, you can interview this person.
Nope.
Not even that.
Nope.
It's just a complete blackout.
Just a closed, opaque, locked
wow.
steel door.
I mean, there is. It is understandable. I mean, in a way, but I still don't see why they wouldn't send a PR person to make them at least try to appear to.
Well, they
give
have
out their message of some kind.
They have for other films. I don't know why they chose not to with this. Maybe they just thought, oh, Maud Barlow. You know,
oh, right. So they just okay. I get
you
it.
You know, oh, that Maud Barlow. You know.
Yeah. You know, that's okay. That was an interesting part of that. That actually speaks for itself.
Yeah.
So.
But that said, there's some powerful voices in the film.
There are.
That are people that don't agree with Maude. And, you know, they are very articulate. They have a very strong perspective. And they're accomplished, powerful people. So powerful in the sense of, you know, in, you know, one of Canada's best known economists, Marcel Boyer.
Making in, policy.
Yeah, that's right. I guess, you know, powerful in the sense that they have influence and that. So I was grateful for getting those interviews.
It was an interesting, definitely a simple, straightforward perspective from the other side. That's very easy to understand, but we won't get into it because people have to watch the film.
Yeah.
So because we have to wrap up this interview, you have done a lot of other films. This is you're doing your first feature length documentary.
This is my first feature length documentary. Yeah.
And how does this compare to the other films that you've done before? And you've covered issues like war affected children, globalization, gender, sweatshop labor, education, refugees. How does this documentary compare with the other work that you've done before?
Well, I mean, from a content perspective or just from an overall?
An overall, you know, okay. Production.
Yeah. First of all, from a content perspective, I think it's funny, but I think it's the only film that I've made that actually focuses on my own backyard. Most of the projects that I've made are about places out there, like developing countries, war-affected countries. So I really wanted to focus on Canada. And it was in that way a very reflective piece for me, because going to all of these different places around the world, I would always come home and be a bit shell-shocked, not shell-shocked, but always contemplative and reflective about just, you know, as an example, look at how much water we have compared to places I've been, like Bangladesh or, you know, Sierra Leone or other places where people are so poor and water is such an issue. There's such scarcity, there's such pollution, there's such poverty. And it's very disturbing. You can't shake memories like that. And it's hard to really come to terms with all of that. So in a way, that was really the motivation behind making Water on the Table, was to try to make something that would not only help me understand my own country a lot more, but also to create something that would hopefully make Canadians and Americans a lot more conscious and aware of, and to not take water for granted. We should not take water for granted.
Which we do, to be honest, in the city particularly.
Yeah.
So Liz, I really want to thank you for joining us here tonight on the program.
Thank you.
And just to remind listeners that Water on the Table will be on TVO. It's going to be on The View from Here, and it will premiere this documentary on Wednesday, March 24th at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it will repeat that same evening at 1 a.m. and again on Sunday, March 28th at 10:30 p.m. And you can also catch the trailer on YouTube.
Thank you so much, Robin. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Liz.
In grade school, you wanted to run faster. In high school, you wanted to play harder. All your life, you've wanted to go further. Here's your chance, and then some. The RCMP is looking for new police officers, men and women who are physically fit, live for a challenge, and won't rest until they know they've made a difference. A career nowhere near ordinary. It's within reach. Find out more at rcmp.ca. A message from the Government of Canada.
Word up. We got Ron Zieg in the studio, but we're just going to get back here right after a quick music track. The resistance is going on. Beast 1333 and Sixth Sense. This is The Quest.
All right, guys. Remember what I said. Deep inside, I always knew that there was something wrong. There's a whole nother world out there.
I speak evolution and conquer spirits from Atlantis. Stay underground like caves and catacombs. Rhyming in this tone that's known as shatter bone. Your fat ass home, get up and rise like foam in this combat zone. Register the new recruits, ingesting the forbidden fruit. Investing in the mind of all the best, I'll make them imitate you. Moving in the staggered column, echo line to line. I slalom as my disciples erect the throne between tomorrow columns. Architects like Imhotep, we killing greed and all these foo-foos. Erect the monument for me right after death like Khufu. Don't believe everything you read, learn to supersede. I came to lead a different creed to breathe. I'm glad it's all agreed, I must proceed. And yes indeedy, growing up so poor and needy, munching on our pork fried rices. All the kids were puffing beaties, but deep inside I always knew that there was something wrong. There's a whole nother world out there with bad shit going on. I did my research, gave out a ton of Illuminati t-shirts. I try to turn every fan into a noble teacher. Check my features, observe the structure of my skeletal. Rival nucleic acid instructions, blood and chemicals. Class mammalia, kingdom animalia, phylum. Hominidae's activities will always end in violence. Deep inside, I always knew that there was something wrong. There's a whole nother world out there.
I speak evolution and conquer spirits from Atlantis. Allegory testimonies, evangelist TV frequencies, low chakra resonating a cold mystery. This bullshit, 2012 hyper wizardry. It's simply this deja vu's in blue. BDU's my tendency, generating phase and energy, corresponding resonating at the rate of tackle on speed. My lucid dream like Jacob Lattice and Beam. Gobble blue beast bloods on a silver screen, but it leads to alchemy. You can't captivate my mind with that reptilian eye. It's gonna die, but you see it in your mind. Nazis gossip over my topics. I've been over your head like Star Wars and moon bases on Reaganomics. The synchronistic initiation, a lambskin apprentice. The blue buds when they talk in the spirits. Disordered teachers from leeches, androgynous dress. Object of the obelisk, the phallic of Osiris. Using devil's vices, remote view to moons of Saturn, Pandora. Meet with a Navi and start the human genome all over. I speak evolution and conquer spirits from Atlantis with crystal clear resolution when I got the solution.
Word up. Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here. It's about 7:34 p.m. And we got our second guest here on the show. Our guest here has a storied history. He was born in the 1940s, and he's been a student, a nomadic hippie, a millionaire real estate broker, a recycling company owner, a homeless person, and he's always been a free man. And currently, he's a writer, social activist, artist, and the webmaster and communications committee chair of the Recession Relief Coalition. And I'd like to welcome to the Word of Mouth Wednesday back on the show today, Ronzik.
Hey, thanks, Daniel. It's good to be back.
Great, yeah, great having you back here in the studio. And I just wanted to get into, I think I'd like to start off with asking you, what's the latest here with the Recession Relief Coalition?
Oh, we're expanding in all directions. I, as the chair of the communications committee, have been working on setting up an outreach program where we're going to have a team of outreach workers go out into the community and do two things, collect stories of people that have had problems due to the recession and see if we can hook them up with the right agencies to give them some help. And also, we're going to do some outreaching amongst the activist community, trying to get a little bit more cooperation going on amongst ourselves because we're so fragmented.
Right, and I've seen there's the Recession Relief Coalition website. You've been updating it a lot, and there's a lot of more content on there, recession-relief-coalition.org. And I noticed that also you got some videos posted on there from your YouTube account, youtube.com/Ronzik's Gallery. And you got some clips there from a town hall meeting, I guess, that took place last month. Was there anything that came out of this town hall meeting? I know there were some politicians there.
It was an interesting thing. I think the one of the key things was that the town hall meeting was ahead of it, we sent out a questionnaire to all of the federal parties asking about about their policy towards some of the recession, how it's affecting the people on the street. Mm-hmm. And all of the parties except the conservatives responded to the questionnaire. The Bloc could not attend the town hall. The conservatives didn't even bother to reply, and the Green and the NDP and the Liberals attended. So I think the key thing that I got out of it was the fact that the lack of concern that the Conservatives have for the Canadian public.
Exactly. And the economic crisis we've got going on, we've just had a flurry of announcements. We actually spent a lot of the show last week talking about the Ontario throne speech and economic situation in Ontario. But also last week there was the Canadian economic announcement and throne speech, and there was major announcements from Toronto too. The city of Toronto, they're saying that they've got a surplus. We got major deficits in Ontario and Canada. Toronto, they've got a few $100 million surplus. But do you have any reaction to these recent budget announcements? Is there anything that struck you?
The federal budget basically was, you got to hand it to Harper. He's a shrewd politician. Mm-hmm. He laid a trap. Nobody wants to have another election to put Harper back into another minority government. So he set a trap, and of course Iggy fell right into it. And so now we're going to be stuck with Harper in a position where, as a minority government, he can act like he's a king. Because Iggy is too terrified to take him on. The budget itself really didn't do much of anything. It was a do-nothing budget. The whole purpose of it was to hang on to power and not to do anything to force an election.
Right, and speaking of Harper here, there's a situation with Harper. He's actually appeared on YouTube. You know, I know Ron Zig's a big contributor to YouTube at Ron Zig's Gallery. I've got some clips up on YouTube, mine, youtube.com/supportlocalscene. Now, Stephen Harper is on YouTube. Actually, we got a quick clip here of the interview. Here is some of the priorities for Harper upcoming.
We're chairing, of course, Canada is chairing the G8 and the G20 leader summits this year in June. And our priority for development, really, for the G8 meeting is to focus on maternal and child health, on a series of investments we want all G8 countries to do in coordination to really save the lives of women and children. We think that with reasonably modest investments, and let's face it, with the fiscal situation that a lot of countries are in, investments in the future are going to have to be fairly modest. But with modest investments, we think we can make a big difference in these areas. So yes, we will be maintaining our aid levels and obviously focusing on priorities like maternal and child health going forward.
That's terrific. Thank you.
So there we have it there. Stephen Harper, thousands of people have already watched this on YouTube. He gets into a lot of topics, but I thought that was a good one to play. First off, because I want to ask you, or we're going to get into talking about this G20, G8, but what did you think about there, about his priorities of helping women and children? Do you think that this is a...
Well, what concerns me about targeting one particular segment or more of a population is it's not designed to help. It's designed to fragment opposition and divide and conquer is what it's all about. If you're going to help a population, you help a population. You don't help specific segments of a population. Does it matter whether it's a woman or a man if he's starving to death?
Shouldn't. Yeah, that is a good point. So this is going to be big, though. This is a we're talking about a G20, G8 meetings taking place in Ontario. I guess the G8 is going to be up north, but the G20 will be actually right here in downtown Toronto. What are you thinking about this?
I'm thinking that this is a wonderful opportunity for Canadians, for the Canadian public, to let the world know that we are not happy with the way things are being done. We're going to have media coverage from every major country in the world here in Toronto, and this is a good time to voice your opposition to some of the terrible things that have been going on in this country.
Exactly. And what are some of the ways that people can do it? I think I've heard that there have been some meetings already of activists meeting, trying to plan out things. What's going on?
Well, there are several things happening. But the key thing is the Toronto Community Mobilization Network is organizing and planning a number of different events, protests, rallies, marches, entertainment events, to go on throughout the G20. Now, there's also a People's Summit that is organizing to go on just prior to the G20 to they're proposing to put on a summit of their own about the people's concerns rather than the economists. I'm just gotten started with a group of people. A couple of weeks ago, we had our first meeting. We're setting up a media center for alternate media so that we will have the same kind of facilities available to us as mainstream media have for their people. So we'll be able to have computer access, internet access, telephones, desks, so there'll be a place centralized where people independent media people can come and work, and we will be issuing media identity badges so that it's not going to be a public space. It's going to be for media people to come in and get their job done.
Awesome. Yeah, I got to look into that. We're going to look into that, I guess, on the Word of Mouth Wednesday coming up in the countdown, I guess, to June.
Can I mention one thing there?
Yeah.
We're having a meeting about the media center tomorrow, and if you go to the to the Recession Relief Coalition website on the actions page, that's where you get a listing of what's coming up. You can get the details if you're interested in coming out and helping out.
Okay, awesome. And then and you mentioned the People's Summit. I got the website there. I think it's peoplesummit2010.ca, and they've got listed the dates June 18th to the 27th. I guess the 27th, that's around the time that the actual G20 is going
on.
But I guess they're going to start the week earlier. So hopefully there is going to be a lot of good activist events coming up. But in terms of the activism and resistance to a G20 meeting, with your history in activism, how big would you say this is in terms of Toronto?
Up until this. The Vietnam War created the largest activism that was happening in Toronto in my lifetime. And I think that this is going to make the turnout for things like that seem small.
Nice.
I think that we've got people from all over the world, activists from all over the world, coming to Toronto to speak out against what the G20 are doing.
Right. Right, and this that 20 world leaders, 20 of the biggest economies in the world, meeting up and discussing the ways or the move their plans for the future. I guess how is it? You know, I think we had you on in the fall. We were talking about the recession still going on, and this was a year, I guess, after they had said that it had started officially, or so. So now we're even past that now. Is this recession how much do you think this recession is affecting people?
Well, you know, like, it's funny, the media and the economists are all saying, "Well, we're in recovery now; the recession's over. Hallelujah, good times are here." Mm-hmm. But tell that to the guys that have lost their job, that aren't getting jobs back, or if they're getting a job. And here's another thing: they're saying, "Well, we created all kinds of new jobs in the economy recently," but people are losing. People are losing high-paying jobs. In many cases, unionized jobs, and being forced into taking menial labor at sometimes half of what they're used to, which is going to create some drastic repercussions in the economy as people start losing their homes because with these lower-paying jobs, they can't make their payments or can't pay their rent. Now, and then we've got people that have been on unemployment insurance, and the unemployment insurance is starting to run out. And naively, they have expected that there would be a safety net there when the unemployment insurance ran out in the term in the form of social assistance. But you cannot receive Ontario Works until you're virtually bankrupt. You have to lose your pension plan, you have to lose your home, you have to lose your fancy car. You're only allowed a few hundred dollars in total assets before you qualify for welfare. So these people are going to be facing permanent poverty, because once you get down that far, it's almost impossible to get back up.
And you're an interesting person to be talking about this with, because your history is, well, in this matter, an interesting thing. You can check out your site, downbutnotout.synthesite.com, and you can even see pictures of you from as recently as 2002 New Year's Eve, and you're living in a shack. You're homeless and living in a shack. So I suspect that you have a lot of knowledge of the streets. What are things like going on in the streets now?
Well, actually, it's changing. It's getting more difficult, because there are a lot more people becoming homeless. Don't let the politicians fool you, the bureaucrats fool you about how they're housing people, because they're housing a few, but there are far more people becoming homeless than there are being housed. But you could tell just by over the past few years, homelessness was basically a downtown core problem up until a few years ago. Now it doesn't matter where you go in the city, you're going to see people begging as far away as the 401. I mean, like, there's no limit to no border to where the homeless people are going, because there's so many of them, there's no room for them downtown. They can't survive.
Exactly, and this is why the work that you're doing with the Recession Relief Coalition is very important, and that's why I got to thank you for doing all the good work you're doing. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention?
I think that if there's anybody out there that has any concern, I wish they would contact me. We're looking for active volunteers to get involved and help us spread the word and help us to do the work that needs to be done to get the politicians to listen. You can email me at ronzig@recession-relief-coalition.org, and I'll be very happy to hear from you.
Awesome, man. Hey, thanks a lot, Ron Zig, Ron Craven. Thank you a lot for coming in today.
Thanks for having me, Daniel.
All right, word up. And we're just going to be right back to wrap things up here on the Word of Mouth. Just going to play a quick track. Here's a track produced by Soul for Hire. It's Ian Kamau, Unknown Misery, and Logical Ethics. A track called Paradise. Word of Mouth.
This is life. Place is safe, clear skies with the wind on my face. Just a taste is all I need. Away from this corruption, mass consumption, and greed. A place where nobody has to hustle to eat. The concrete or high rise, state buildings, a place so we can raise children and let love circulate without the hate feeling. Where every day feels like the beginning of summer. Chilling by the lake late, reminiscing the struggle that's no more. Like them days when we was dirt poor, broke food from Miss Bev on the third floor. We made it through the worst storm on the search for what we thirst for. Like justice, equality, freedom. We gotta work more hard to unite. Every culture is one. Under the sun, we shall overcome. We'll stop until the war is done. To everybody, hats, food, shelter, and clothes. We planets are sold. My heart is telling me so. In paradise.
You know you gotta love your life. Love your life. Love your life. It's how we do what we're living for.
through the loud noises in my city. I look for someone nice, it ain't no good life. I'm looking for paradise. Tiger the mama working these nights and days to feed her family. Stress that night she stays, cause these days not much change except my age. The Bible lost the lock and innocent in the cage. My head is feeling heavy, I learned to manage the weight. Through the darkness I can see the light, so come see her with me. I miss my little soldier and my little soldier miss me. The truth is getting older, I'm trying to leave the whiskey and say peace to shift these bundles. Peace and hurt, forgive me. Before I go, everyone that's been rolling with me. Through the thick and thin, love, we all know life ain't easy. Love to people who always let me be me. In the struggle that we live, there's only one way out. So don't shed a tear, I'm in paradise now.
You know you gotta love your life.
Paradise calling, cast out of the garden. Spirit cries out while our hearts do harden. Harder than the concrete, we live within the walls. Within right angles, we strain to hear the call. It seems in the day-to-day, they always choose to mention the pot of gold, but the road is paved with good intention. With the wealth of the world, they ridicule the peasant. They think that paradise is the pleasure of the present. They wish to rule above all, not thinking they are equal. But paradise, in fact, is the freedom of the people. And if this life is destiny, destined to be a test, then what of the oppressor? Blessed are the oppressed. Suffering explodes from the seeds of our desire. Blooming from the branches of trees made of fire. But if our spirit shelters, our nature should intervene. Cause if the trees are burning, I'd rather swim in the stream. We live within a dream, the nightmare of destruction. Defying freedom, controlling the means of consumption. Meaning I work for and don't make for what I have. Choose it for myself if I choose to walk a path. Pursuing the ruling class, seeking the hands of stain with the blood of those who wish to see paradise again. Because we know it's calling, convinced that we once had it. And if life is a test, then I pray that we will pass it.
You know you gotta love your life.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday, back here. Just wanted to wrap things up here when we got the show wrapping up. It is our St. Patrick's Day special. We didn't get into much of that, but it is somewhat of a holiday. People are wearing green on the streets, and there's here we go. Oh, here's Robin.
Everybody's celebrating outside.
Oh yeah.
It's like people on the streets of,
the summer
that's
weather.
That's right. Yeah. That's what we're being reported right now. Folks are all outside and they're all celebrating St. Patrick's Night.
Right. All right. And so we had this situation here. We got in a bit of the water issue at the start of the show.
Yeah, that's a big issue. Mm-hmm. One that is just the tip of the iceberg.
Right. With the World Water Day coming up next week.
Yeah. No, World Water Day. And actually, on Sunday, it's the International Day of the Elimination of Racism.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, one day for that, on a Sunday. Seems kind of strange.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, when you think of it that way. Well, speaking of that, this is another clip of Harper on YouTube. Here he was asked about foreign aid to Africa.
Foreign aid will increase again in Canada, will go up another 8%, very rapid growth. After that, it will be flatlined, it will be held constant at these record levels of spending as our deficit recovers. We're in a position in Canada that we can maintain these strong levels of international support without having to cut them, in order to reduce our deficit, and that's what we want to continue to do.
So that's what they're going to continue to do. They're going to continue with a record aid, but then they're going to cap it.
Yeah, that's a lot of NGOs are really upset about this because it really means cutting off their aid for the next years because they're not going to get any increases from what they need and all the prices will continue going up. Right. So really it is a cut and that's the way they're looking at it. Mm-hmm. But you know, like Ronzig said, Harper's quite a crafty politician.
Exactly. And yeah, he's reaching out to a new audience there online. He's gone viral.
Harper's gone viral. I saw that. I saw this clip actually posted last night. They have it posted. It's on the front page. It's Harper interview. If you go to YouTube.com, and then I woke up today and I checked back and it had 20,000 views. When I watched it last night, it had about 200. And I checked within a few hours, it's got 20,000.
They probably linked it to all their conservative right. members.
Right.
Watch it. Get in there. Make us look good. Yeah. 20,000 of you.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and then so we got the recession still going on.
Yeah, Ronzig made some good points there.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know that. I didn't know what to say about, you know, Harper's focus on maternal health and children's health. It's really difficult to argue against that. But Ronzig had a really good point.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I guess we'll just we'll get into reading some event listings. Unless is there anything else you wanted to mention, Robin?
No. Let's just get into the events, and then we'll head out and celebrate St. Patrick's Night.
Oh yeah, let's see what we got going on coming up in the city, local areas. What we got coming up is actually on Friday. There's going to be a public forum. Friday, March 19th, 2010, 7 p.m. There's going to be a public forum, dismantling the sweatshop city. Panel discussion featuring Clayton Thomas Mueller, Uzma Shakir, Sakura Sanders, Lee Marikel, Adil Shekawi, and more. It's at Ryerson University, right here on campus, room 72 LIB, 350 Victoria Street. You can get more info at toronto.nooneisillegal.org. And there's some of those people at the forum we've interviewed on the show in the past. So it looks like a good activist event. Also coming up Saturday, there's a Toronto Housing Forum hosted by Acorn Toronto, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Main Square Community Center, 245 Main Street, just south of Danforth, near the main subway station. Toronto Housing Forum this Saturday from Acorn. And then also Saturday, Toronto Truth Seekers at Dundas Square, weather permitting. We didn't make it out last week. It was a rainy one, but we'll see if Toronto Tree Seekers are out this Saturday. And then also Council of Canadians Toronto Chapter Water Forum 2010 at the Metro Hall, 55 John Street, is coming up on Sunday, I believe it is, at the doors open 9:30 a.m. finishes around 5:30, so it'll be a whole day of events. You can check out that listing actually though at rabble.ca for more info. And also World Water Day, Vote Out Fluoride Rally, Vote Fluoride Out campaign outside of the City Hall. That's coming up on March the 22nd. That event listing is also at rabble.ca to find that info.